This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
The first time I saw a mysterious glowing light moving in the air was at Woodboro Hill in Wiltshire County, England, back in 1992. It was my first trip to investigate crop formations, and one night, half a dozen of us watched a small, spherical orange-white light moving along the trees atop the hill. Since the early 1990s, many videotapes and photographs have captured glowing, small lights in crop formations. Some eyewitnesses without cameras say they have seen the crop go down beneath moving lights. Eventually, I wrote my fourth book about the phenomenon in Mysterious Lights in Crop Circles. The first edition was published in 2000, at about the same time that digital cameras were beginning to replace 35mm negative cameras. Coincidentally, I began to receive hundreds of digital photographs from people all over this planet, showing glowing spheres or orbs in forests, churches, birthday parties, all kinds of places. Most of the photographers never saw the glowing orbs at the scenes. It was only later, looking at the images, that the orbs would be in the pictures, sometimes hundreds of orbs of different colors, sizes, and varying surfaces would be in the same image. And now, in November 2007, comes a book entitled The Orb Project by physicist Klaus Heinemann and philosopher Michiel Ledwith, with a foreword by William Tiller, Professor Emeritus of Material Science and Engineering at Stanford University. Professor Tiller wrote the 1997 groundbreaking book, Science and Human Transformation, which postulates the existence of subtle energies beyond the four fundamental forces of strong electromagnetic, weak, and gravitation. Professor Tiller hypothesized that there is a fifth category, subtle energies, which act on human consciousness. And now, Professor Tiller writes in the foreword of the Orb Project, quote, "My working hypothesis is that the orb phenomenon should be looked at as a positive experience for humanity, as just the first of a variety of communication manifestations to appear in the unfolding adventure of our future. The orbs are certainly not creatures of our space-time world," unquote. Are the glowing orbs intelligent creatures? Are they from beyond our three-dimensional space-time universe? Would that mean they're angels? Or from angelic realms? This week, I talked about these questions with Klaus Heinemann, Ph.D. In 1968, he received his degree in physics from Tübingen University in Germany. Between 1969 and 1990, he worked at NASA Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California. His NASA research was devoted to studying the reactions of solid surfaces and small crystals in the harsh environment of various gases and temperatures. The goal was to develop shuttle and space vehicle surfaces that could withstand space travel. Between 1979 to 1984, Dr. Heinemann also worked at Stanford University on the physics of gaseous impacts on metal and crystal surfaces and how such surfaces behave in an oxidizing environment. Today, he is retired from that work, but continues his research of the orb phenomenon. He has taken thousands of photographs in which the orbs show up, and the first one was on September 26, 2004, at a seminar called Healing Prayer Intensive. One of his digital camera images had a very bright circular feature, which so surprised and puzzled Professor Heinemann that he went back to the hotel ballroom of the seminar to see if he could figure out what had reflected so brightly. But he could not solve the orb image by any conventional explanation. I began our interview by asking what finally convinced him that many of the orbs are not the product of electrostatic discharge in digital cameras, dust, or moisture reflecting light in the air.
If you see an orb, eclipsed by an object, for example, by the head of a person or by a chair or something, so that the orb is clearly behind that object and far away from the camera. That is a very convincing argument. And we have seen a number of these pictures where orbs are not fully seen but eclipsed by an object in front of it. I would say the evidence is that the orbs are emitting light in a highly coherent fashion, almost like a laser beam, and beaming that light into the camera. That is the result of a lot of experiments that I've done with orbs.
Well, you know, this was one of the puzzles as I was reading your book. I grasp the idea that if you have a digital camera and it has a flash, and that the flash seems to be necessary for the orbs to emerge on photographs. And when I think of a flash, I think of photons leaving the flash and going out and bouncing off of whatever it is that is being photographed. What would be the substantive nature of these orbs that they would be able to take photon energy into themselves and fluoresce, meaning that they could release back energy in a different frequency outside of what we call the visible light spectrum, because people with the digital camera are not seeing the orbs when they are taking the picture, and the orbs only show up usually in the photographs after the picture has been taken. So what is this orb? What is it made out of that it can absorb photons and then selectively change the frequency somehow of the electromagnetic spectrum so that those photons are going back directly to the camera as visible light?
I would say that there's something missing in the equation that we've discussed so far, and that is the velocity that these orbs have and the change of size. I believe that the only reason why we normally cannot see them with our eyes is because they are moving so fast, extremely fast, and because they're constantly changing their size. So in order to see them, they literally have to hold still for a moment and have to decide, yes, I want to be seen, and then they move on after that. So it is not as if they are there all the time like we are. Their normal position is one of great mobility and great speed, whereas our normal position would be one of rest. So they are in a different space.
What is provoking the change of size and speed?
That may be just simply their way of being. I really don't know.
If you were going to try to do a thought exercise about what the orbs actually are and in what frequency they might exist and what relationship that frequency has to our carbon-based life here as we know it on the surface of the Earth and through the universe, what kind of a thought exercise could you do?
I think the only thought exercise that I could do is one where I would have to frame it entirely differently. I would have to frame it in a way that is not limited to the physics that our physical reality is based on. I believe that these are phenomena that are outside of our normal physical reality. And so many of these questions are really totally unanswered in my mind. I see them existing in a different energetic form, and in a form that we do not yet have a hold of, in a form that is not in any way related to our physical universe. It's not related to our physical atoms. It's not related to how these atoms vibrate. And it's not related in any way to velocities, not limited by the speed of light, none of this. There must be other universes, other realities that are subject to a different set of physical constants in such a way that we're not seeing those, that they are totally interspersed with us, but they are within the vacuum space where we are, that is all around us. We all know that our reality is essentially one that has huge voids and a little bit of substance here and there. We are composed of mostly empty space.
Right.
and that this empty space can be interspersed with a lot of different universes that simply cannot be seen, but that nevertheless have energetic aspects.
Okay, now if I'm following you, the space has to do with the space at the atomic and the molecular level of which we are made.
Yes.
Essentially, that's more space than it is substance or matter.
Yeah, that's almost all space and very little substance.
The orbs, when you say energetic bodies, you mean that they could be energy, plasma, moving at a faster speed that we don't see?
That is more like the metaphor that I'm looking at, yes.
Now, would you explain from your point of view what you think of when you use the term energetic body for these orbs?
I would see them as energetic plasmas, but of an energy that people call subtle energy. It would be a plasma of an energy that is not of the normal physical nature.
Undetermined and undetected by our current physics.
Yet undetermined and undetected by our current physics, correct.
If they are intelligent plasmas of unknown origin, and your book is positing the hypothesis that they have showed up only in the last decade and a half, 2 decades, with a tremendous intensity around the world.
Yes.
And if I am understanding correctly, you are linking them to a fascinating chapter in your book, Orbs, Evidence of Divine Presence. Could you take the concept of intelligent plasmas of unknown origin and talk about how that might relate to evidence of divine presence?
Well, in my mind, they can be very easily one and the same. What is really divine? It's something that is beyond the understanding, beyond the physics that we have. It goes beyond. Divine is, in my understanding, a reality beyond the physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is in the divine realm. Even human consciousness extends into the divine realm. So there is a vast continuum of something that is not nothing.
Is it fair to say that consciousness is ever present everywhere in the cosmos, as opposed to something like a photon having to travel a certain distance?
That is a very good statement. I would say that that is fair to say. In my mind, consciousness is projected and it's available to be received everywhere in the universe. And it will not decay. It is therefore good. It is there to be picked up by anybody, anywhere in the universe.
Like a divine field.
It is a field, correct, yes.
From that perspective, you're saying then that the orbs would be in what relationship to that divine field?
They would be in the same relationship as I would see, for example, I see the human existence as a very temporary excursion, if you will, from a reality that is the divine reality, beyond our reality. And the consciousness part would remain after the physical death of the person. So that there are, in fact, huge numbers and varieties of entities in that reality that we cannot see.
That we pass into after the moment of death?
That we would likely pass into when our physical existence ends here.
Then, Professor Heinemann, you are implying that the orbs would have a direct link to the souls of the body containers in what we'll call this dimension, and that after the moment of death, where the consciousness, soul, spirit, entity would go, could be related to the orb phenomenon?
It is possible. I would certainly not exclude that. But if you go in the direction of orbs being, let's say, souls of people not living with us, that may be far too limiting. I would think that they could be, I would just simply call them entities in a reality that is beyond our reality.
Then why is it that they are ever present here?
Because in that reality, space and time have no meaning. So ever-present and here is only meaningful for us in this physical reality. For us, yesterday is yesterday and tomorrow is tomorrow. But in this other reality that I'm talking about, the aspect of time and the aspect of space does not exist.
A steady state consciousness.
Steady state consciousness.
In a divine field.
In a field that is perceived as divine or as spiritual.
The field and the consciousness is eternal, but the matter worlds and the energy worlds come and go within that steady state consciousness and that divine field.
That sounds very good, yes. The only change that I would make there is there may even be a concept of time in that steady state field, but the time would be vastly different from ours. So for our perspective, it would be totally steady state. But in fact, there may still be a time element. In other words, with the consciousness that we human beings produce, this steady state consciousness will in fact be increased. We are vehicles to influence that field with our own consciousness.
Why is it then that the orbs would show up in the photographs of humans suddenly so much in the last 15 years?
It's explainable by these digital cameras. There have been pictures taken and orbs seen in normal photos that were not taken with digital cameras, but they were never taken for serious and appeared at a very low contrast and just was not the phenomenon that was really studied because they were too rare. But with the advent of the digital cameras, especially cameras that have a higher sensitivity in the infrared range, this became much more prominent. And then relatively only few orbs are typically seen in very high contrast. Most of the orbs come out, I would say, only with the aid of contrast enhancement techniques that you can use with these cameras. You can very legitimately increase the contrast of an image and therefore just make these orbs much more prominent.
And you make a point in the book that you think in your research that the orbs exist basically in a frequency that from our point of view would be infrared.
Yeah, a lot of those are, but not all of them. It appears as if they are at somewhat lower frequencies than our visible spectrum. The main point really is that the digital cameras can very easily be used to enhance contrast in such a way that you can really make it clearly visible.
That leads to another thing that really puzzles me. Why is there so much structure in some of these orbs, the ones that appear to almost look like the rods and cones in an eye? And why would there be so many variations in the structures as you show in the book?
I think this is a very interesting question, and I only have a very pragmatic answer to that. And that is that I believe that this reality in which the orbs exist is at least as rich in variety as our own reality is. And in our reality, we have living things and with anything that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that reality, there is also this huge variety, and we see different orbs looking completely different.
And a world of plasma that is technically not a world of matter and not just a world of light, but is somewhere in between, correct?
Somewhere in between, yes. It may be a world of intelligent plasma,
right,
or intelligent beings that are not physical beings.
And that comes back to the issue of, is there a direct link between the life force that animates our container bodies in the life in this dimension, and that at the moment of death, is there a transition then of that consciousness in that soul spirit entity into that which you have said is the beyond, that place after the moment of death? And could that be then the plasma place of the orbs?
It could be. I really don't know. But I would think that these are all questions that we have to ask ourselves, and they are very much questions that go in the field of belief. I do think that there is some validity to that.
And I guess I am trying to wrap my mind around that when we see or photograph the orb phenomenon, that somehow we would be literally capturing a piece of eternity from a perspective that would be non-eternal, meaning the 3D universe world, which will disappear. Would all the universes that exist, assuming that there is an infinite number beyond this one, would the orb phenomena be interacting in a consciousness field in all of the universes?
You ask very good questions, and I think that I'm actually amazed at your questions. And I would say yes, they probably would.
Right.
They probably would. This is a truly phenomenal situation where we are witnessing something that is literally visiting us and making itself visible in our physical instruments and our cameras, yet coming from a reality that is not ours, that we cannot describe. All we can say to this reality is that it is not subject to space and time.
Why is it that the divine field and the steady state of consciousness continues to work so hard over millennia to interface with this carbon-based hominid life form?
Yes.
That seems to be so violent and self-destructive.
Yes, yes. Why is that? It's very interesting that they consider us on this small planet in this vast universe important enough to even bother. That's the question, right?
Yes.
That is the question. It is mind-boggling that that would be the case if you really look at the vastness of the universe and beyond. But apparently, they have a stake in us.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.